When I say domestic abuse, what's the first thing you think of? Yeah, most likely you say it's a physical attack of some kind that's repeated over time. Well, the term includes a lot more than just that. While physical abuse will cause harm to a victim's body, which will impact their heart and mind, emotional abuse can do the same, but from the opposite direction. It'll damage a victim's heart and mind, which affects their physical well-being. So do our family courts and judges have the necessary understanding about all of this, especially when it comes to divorce cases? Our first guest today says that there's some education work that needs to be done. She's the founding partner of the law firm Fava Law here in New Jersey, who's adding her voice and efforts to this cause. Sandra Fava, how are you today, Sandra?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
And learn more about the Fava Law Legal Services, favalawnj.com. And, of course, we do have that link and our homepage. As I said in the intro, Sandra, the definition of domestic abuse to way too many people is limited. So what is it about emotional abuse that needs to be better understood first by people in the lives of the victim, but certainly equal to that by the courts?
So definitely, you know, the term domestic abuse has been expanded over time, most recently to include the term coercive control. And coercive control covers, in part, the emotional abuse. It is the type of abuse that you often can't see unless you're paying very close attention. It happens across both genders, all socioeconomic classes, all education levels. It's the type of abuse that seeps into a relationship where the victim does not necessarily realize that they are being groomed, and then a victim of this type of abuse. And you see it in things that are a control of someone's actions, the stripping away of friends and family to isolate the person. You may see it early on in a relationship where a partner will criticize or make comments about someone's attire, for example. You know, I don't really like it when you wear that dress. That color doesn't look great on you. And over time, that develops into these are the things that you are allowed to wear.
So it almost sounds, I'm jumping the gun here with the segment I got coming up later in the show, but it almost sounds like what human trafficking involves, trying to dominate through coercion.
Yes. Yeah, there are definitely similarities that you can draw across both of those spectrums for sure. And the problem that we have, you know, society as well as the judges who are presiding over these cases here in New Jersey is that when you don't have hard evidence, right, you may eventually have some text messages, but these abusers are very wise. You know, technology has leaps and bounds. It moves every single day. So the more that the conversation happens about this type of abuse and control, the more abusers are become savvy as to how to minimize any proof that a victim may have. And so a judge who sits in family part who may not have past experience in the family courts as, you know, an attorney, practicing attorney, they have a harder time seeing through this. And a lot of times, unfortunately, the Prevention Against Domestic Violence Act is used as a sword instead of as a shield, meaning that somebody will make allegations of domestic abuse that may not necessarily be true in order to gain leverage or the upper hand in a pending related matrimonial action, whether that be divorce or custody or financial issues. So, you know, the education really needs to come for all of the judges, you know, because they are moved at whim, so to speak, throughout the different parts of the courthouse in all of our counties to understand that what coercive control looks like and what they need to be paying closer attention to for and the tips that they'll see in this type of a relationship.
So with the coercive treatment, the emotional abuse, what's the, I don't know if the right term would be, burden of proof? Because with physical abuse, you can have doctor's reports, doctor's testimony, medical reports, visible signs, where all that's absent when it comes to emotional abuse.
So not necessarily. You can still have, there are experts who will evaluate people for what is considered battered spouse syndrome. And that the name of that, I think, can be a misnomer because it doesn't necessarily mean physical abuse. Battered spouse syndrome does also cover emotional and mental abuse, psychological abuse. You'll find that there are psychological testing as well as interviews from experienced professionals who've studied this and are part of the domestic violence world who understand the nuances that they can demonstrate that this person is, in fact, a victim by their responses to certain things and the manner in which they've been living their lives, for example. So oftentimes with somebody who's a victim of coercive control, again, you'll find that they are very limited in their ability to make decisions on their own. They're very fearful of what could potentially happen to them. They have a clouded vision or perception of what would happen if they don't do what their abuser has required of them or asked of them or expected of them. And some of these things are as minor as like what you're allowed to buy at a grocery store. So there are experts that are involved. However, you know, that's a time-consuming, costly process. And as we know, not everybody has the same access to the legal system as, you know, people are led to believe. So, you know, what you need to do is to be able to find, first of all, a therapist, somebody who has experience in the domestic violence world who can first, you know, kind of say to you, yes, I think that this is what is happening to you, right? And then kind of go through the stages, you know, how long have you been in this relationship? What did it start with? Where were you when you first met? Where are you now, right? So if you are somebody who had full control of your finances, made the financial decisions, paid all of the bills, and now you can't even find, you don't even know where the banking is done, right? That is something that can be demonstrated through a skilled attorney if you are in a courtroom trying one of these cases.
So with Sandra Fava, who is the founding partner of the law firm Fava Law in New Jersey, favalawnj.com, their website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. We're talking about a couple in this conversation, but it is more often than not more than just a couple. There are innocent victims, the children, in all this, and there is legislation which, in a way, this could accomplish what you're calling for to happen overall. But the legislation focusing specifically on child custody cases, the state Senate's S-4510, the Assembly A-5761, it's basically encouraging and almost mandating that family court judges look at the emotional side of what is going on in front of them, not just the legal side.
Correct. And I think this legislation is super important. I didn't mean to cut you off there, Chris, but right now when a judge is required to make a custody determination, there are statutory factors that they do look at. One of them does not specifically talk about this direct impact of emotional consequences of children. You know, children obviously live in a home with parents or, you know, in a relationship or witness to this type of abuse. And what happens is that they will become either aligned with the abuser out of a fear-based, which is often misinterpreted by courts as a preference for an abusive parent. And what happens in those situations is when the victim, the spouse or the partner, is removed from that situation by way of, you know, a separation or whatever happens, the child then becomes a substitute. And so we are creating generational, you know, emotional damage because we're not recognizing that these kids are also victims as well. Watching a parent or a partner from a child perspective live in this manner is, in fact, abuse. And they are, you know, taking away a protective parent and putting them with an abuser only increase the risks of harm to that child rather than protecting them, which is what the court's overall mantra is to do, right? To protect our children, our innocent, right, our most vulnerable parts of society.
And I know that the various court systems do have advocates for the children, and it's important for those advocates to understand too, be part of this education process as far as the importance of the emotional side of what's been unfolding, not just the physical side.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that most advocates, whether it's through foundations or professionals such as forensic psychiatric evaluators, doctors, experts who do these custody evaluations, a lot of them, in my experience, do have the training and the understanding of this type of abuse. Where the disconnect is getting others to see it as well, where we're missing more understanding from what I have seen in over 20 years of practice of family law, is people like the Division of Child Protection and Permanency not fully understanding how to look for this and not being well trained in what this means and how it impacts children. And again, back to our legal system, that disconnect there, where they're not fully understanding how this is important. A lot of judges will ask or make statements such as, well, the abuser did this to the victim, not to the kids, right? So I can understand separating the victim from the abuser, but I don't see a reason why the abuser shouldn't have access to the children. And that's the big disconnect that needs to be really fixed, and quite urgently, because we are having, like I said earlier, we're just creating generational individuals with generational abuse.
Yeah, I mean, it's a proven study after study that if a youth sees abuse happening in their household, they in turn are going to become abusers as they get into relationships. It's a vicious cycle that really, when you think about that, it could be so easily addressed and prevented through laws like I referenced, and a better understanding when a judge is looking from the bench to see more than just the law books, but to see the lives in front of them and to ask for understanding, tell me, inform me, educate me, and help me make that informed decision that I would think all parties want to have in the situation. Learn more about the legal services that Fava Law provides, favalawnj.com. Sandra Fava, as a long-time advocate for victims of abuse, I thank you for the work that you do, and in this case and so many others, that you help people see the need for a greater understanding and a wider perspective, looking at an issue that too many people look at narrowly, and that just adds more hurt to the victim. So thank you for what you do.
Thank you. Thanks for having me and having this conversation.